Tim, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Are you in a position today of sitting there and saying, I told you so?
Well, you could say I've been in that position for actually a number of years now, because a lot of these things, a lot of the problems we identified in the public inquiry in 2004, we were shouted down, we were told by the council's counsel, counsel's barrister, not to make accusations about things that we couldn't say were going to be the case. We were told to be careful about what we said the council could pay its consultants to say. And we're finding out a lot of things that we did say are turning out to be true. It just goes to show that public inquiry is not necessarily all it's cracked up to be.
Where do you think the biggest fault lies? Because we now have the almost unedifying picture of the council coming out and saying, quite rightly in some cases, that these things are not up to scratch. And then we have BNL, Bam Nuttall, saying, well, you know, the part of the deal was that this wouldn't be exposed and we're doing all we can to try and put things right.
Well, I think the council have well and truly painted themselves into a corner, haven't they? I mean, I simply don't accept or believe that a large, established, respected construction company like BAM Nuttall have made mistakes that have amounted to a price difference of some £53 million, which is 60%. 60% above the agreed target price at the beginning of the project. Now, we don't know BAM Nuttall's side. I'm glad they've been forced to come out and they're going to be making a statement soon. But the fact remains that who are the paymasters here? The county councils are supposed to be in charge of this contract. They should be on top of this. There should be no question of these things being at this sort of level. 5-10% maybe. We can all accept that kind of thing. And I think it shows the fact that the county council, I'm sorry, but the officers and some of the members do not have the competence or the experience or the knowledge and are not qualified enough to deal with such a massive project.
I was talking to a council official earlier today, and I made the point to him that maybe the railway would have been a better option. In response, he said, well, of course, the financing came because it was a guided busway. We're talking about level crossings today, and there would be huge hold-ups if this had become a railway line, presumably because a guided bus would pass quicker than a train would pass. And also, I made the point that it is unsightly, these miles and miles of concrete, and he said, well, so would a railway be. These are the sort of answers that are being given, quite rightly, by a council official. What do you say to those?
Well, I think all your listeners and the general public know what a railway looks like and they know how it works. I mean, just because you reopen, mark you, not open anew, but reopen a railway where there always used to be one with modern signalling and modern level crossings, why would that suddenly be any more different or more disruptive than any other railway? Let's not forget that in terms of closure and disruption of level crossings and places like that, a train has the capacity to carry far more passengers than a bus. In order to get those sorts of numbers onto the guided busway, you need dozens of buses to compare with one or two trains. A train might keep the barrier down for a total of maybe a minute or a minute and a half. But the guideway, effectively, if they're going to get up to sort of hilarious levels of frequency that the council have been claiming, you're talking about a best bus every 3 minutes holding you up for 38, 40 seconds. That's an awful lot more. No, I'm sorry. I think the vast majority of the general public know what a train looks like, know how it operates, know what the infrastructure looks like, and know how it works. It's just a joke comparison.
It was, of course, single track, wasn't it? Another track would have needed to have been built, presumably, hugely expensive.
Not hugely expensive, certainly not as expensive as this farce has turned out to be, but the original line was a double track line. It was single track by the time it finished because it only required to support one freight train per day, so it didn't need to be more than single track to remain operational. But there was all the room there to put in two tracks, and this is another one of the council's great facades about this fact that it's got to be a guided busway so that the vehicles can pass each other at higher speed closer together rather than having to be steered like on a conventional road. They always forget to mention that actually we need you have to have the parallel service road to rescue failed and trapped buses, and that makes the whole formation wider than the existing railway formation had been. We could have reopened the railway in the existing width with no land purchase whatsoever.
what is the position now with your organisation? I mean, I read letters from you fairly regularly. I know you're still very active, but is there really any point anymore, apart from the pleasure in being proved right, in your opinion, in carrying on? Because we're never going to see a railway line again there now, are we, sadly?
Well, a couple of things there. There's no pleasure in being proved right, and the reason I say that is that I'm a county council taxpayer, as are the vast majority of cast iron members, and indeed the executives who continue to work so hard keeping on top of this. When when the Guideway was given the permission, we did have a meeting and we said, oh, we ought to disband now, we're not going to get the railway reopened. A lot of people said, no, hang on a minute, we're going to be at the mercy of the county council's hype, telling us all how this brilliant and wonderful this is going to be. We need people who are in there monitoring, who keep writing letters, who make the public realise, no, we're not going to listen to the county council's hype. Now, in terms of relaying the railway, as I recall in the Transport and Works Act order given by the inspector, I believe I'm right in saying that provision had to be made to be able to reinstate at least what would be called light rail, or trams to you and me, and the great public need to know that, for example, that is exactly what is being done on the Edinburgh Guarded Busway right now. They are literally right now laying rails on the Edinburgh Guarded Busway to reinstate a tramway.
So whilst we will never see trains as we used to see on there, and trains as we know them on there again, trams and variations of trams could easily be fitted onto there?
Well, that's certainly as I understand it. I mean, the contract, or what the work has done so far, has obviously given us a pretty solid foundation. There are technical questions about laying tracks on top of concrete, and of course this brings us full circle to where these defects are. There's a question about the spacing of the concrete beams and whether they'll expand in the heat and cause damage, and there's also a question about where they haven't used deep piling, the alternative slab formation, means that they can't guarantee the tolerances between the joins of the track. I mean, let's get one thing clear. The big difference between the guided busway and the railway is that in the guided busway, you are trying to lay long, heavy, stiff concrete beams on a wet, soggy fen. And the reason why a railway is 100 times better for that sort of formation is that it is inherently flexible, and although you have to keep the rails engaged with each other in order for a train to run on it, the whole formation is inherently flexible, and that's the big difference. And that's why there's no comparison, by the way, of this scheme with either Adelaide in Australia or Essen in Germany. They were both created and constructed in completely different circumstances. This is an entirely new scheme anywhere in the world to try and lay this sort of formation on the soggy fen, and that's why I maintain that the officers at the County Council and those members that supported this scheme simply did not have the experience or the competence or the qualifications to have dealt with this. And many people that came to the public inquiry, and let's not forget this, were just as equally qualified or experienced, or even more so, than the protagonists within the council. And they need to remember that, and I think a bit of humility is called for.
Tim, as ever, good to talk to you. Thanks very much for joining us. That's Tim Phillips from Cast Iron. You've heard what Tim had to say, a man who has followed this whole thing from beginning to, well, not the end, because we haven't reached the end yet. And that was his opinion. We'd like to hear what you think. Many of you have got in touch. We'll try and bring you your reaction as soon as we possibly can.